There's some things that I want to share with you tonight. Get this line down because I want to build off this tonight. Don't settle, write this down. Don't settle with what only God saved you from, but I need you to know what God saved you for. So let me say that again. Don't settle for simply what God saved you from. I mean, and I love coming here and listening to the testimonies. And tonight, we didn't have a testimony because there was something, there was a great testimony that was shared with Pastor Patrick and with Tony and what all was happening there. Sunday night, you'll hear great testimonies. But that stops short if we don't know what God has saved us for. And the thing is, we can hear all the stories of the past, but you know what's happened is we can all tell the stories of what God took us out of. But I'm going to tell you, one of the biggest challenges that I watch and talk with students about is they don't know how or what God has saved them for. And so I want to walk you through something tonight. I have spent 30 years, the first 30 years of ministry in my life, the founder of Times Square Church, Pastor David Wilkerson, asked me while I was going and attending Baylor University, asked me to come to Detroit with his son Gary and to go into ministry for the summer. And it was an important time of my life. And like Pastor Patrick saying yes to Pastor Carter, I said yes to Pastor Dave. Ended up in Detroit, what I thought was going to be 2 months ended up being 30 years of my life. So I never went back to Baylor, but went on to other educational institutions. But those 30 years were so life transforming. Well, this crazy thing happened just before I left Detroit a few years ago, is Detroit started to become this kind of epicenter because of these huge tax breaks for the movie industry. All these movies were coming in. And the first movie that got the ball rolling was these people stuck a note underneath my secretary's door. Now, we lived in one of the worst inner cities in America where we were in Detroit. It was a very, very intense place. Our church that I was pastoring, on one side of us was the Deja Vu strip club. On the other side of us was the worldwide pornographic videos. And on the other side of us across the street was the Crown Prostitution Motel. And we were right next to it. And that's where our church was. So it was a very difficult area. So this note comes under a door that says, hey, we'd like to use this. Just nothing like this happens in Detroit. They stuck a note under the door and said, hey, we'd like to use your house for a movie that we want to shoot here. And my secretary's going, yeah, right. They're going to come in. They're going to case the joint. Then they'll kill us. So she said, no way. And so she said what she did was she just crumpled up the note, crumpled up the cell phone number on there, threw it out. Then nothing happened. And 2 weeks later, another note came underneath and said, hey, I work with Clint Eastwood and I want to do a movie there and we want to shoot out of your house. And finally she came to me and she goes, what do you think I should do? I said, well, if this is true, bring them to the church. So if they want to do anything bad to you, let's get them saved. And then we can just kind of start from there. Well, they show up at the church and the guy who shows up was the guy that was the executive producer for Million Dollar Baby with Clint Eastwood. And he goes, we want to film the first movie here with all these great tax breaks. And out of my secretary's home, they filmed Gran Torino out of her home. The whole, they'll get off my lawn. And so they did this whole thing right there. I mean, just two blocks. And we watched the filming and everything. And then all of a sudden, it started just to go crazy. It wasn't New York, LA crazy, but for a Midwest city like Detroit, it was huge. And so all these movies started to come in. And I mean, from Hugh Jackman was there. I mean, I'm going to go back and then I'll bring it up to the present. So you had Gran Torino. And then after that, Hugh Jackman was there with Real Steel and doing it out of the old Ford factory. And then it just kept going. And the last one they just did was Batman versus Superman. So they just did all that. Well, in the midst of all this, on my street, like they were using everybody's street except my street. But then they came to my street. Now, the movie that they did was really bogus. It was just a terrible movie. Like, it went to the theater for a day and then to Netflix. It was just that bad. It was just kind of like, oh, we're losing money. Let's just put it on Netflix. So it was the movie. It's bad because the first one was bad. This is even worse. They did to do a sequel of a bad movie, you know it's bad. So they took a bad movie called SWAT, and then they did another movie called very, very creative, SWAT 2. And so they shot a scene on our street for SWAT 2. So SWAT 2, trust me, this is not something you're going like, oh, we got to download. Do not download it, okay? It's just dumb. So our house was going to be in it. It was just going to be shown in it. My next door neighbor's house, who goes to the church, her house was going to be used, and it was a scene called The Wrong Guy. And so they're searching for this one guy, and the criminal of this movie is the liquid cyborg from T2. That was the actor that was there. So he's not the guy. He's not there. And so they come through, and so they're going to shoot one night from morning till night. They're going to shoot the whole thing. And so my house is in it, and it's just simply called The Wrong House. So I'm standing out there, and they go, hey, in order for your house to be in it, we've got to pay you to be in it. I said, you're going to pay me for my house to be in it? They said, absolutely. I said, well, what do we get paid? He said, how's $50? I said, done. I said, totally. Give me. So I got a check. It says SWAT 2 on it. And I had this whole thing, took a picture. I'm going, SWAT 2 check. And so I'm sitting there with this SWAT 2 check. And he goes, hey, why don't you come out at nighttime and see us do this whole thing? The director said. So I'm out there. And so the cops bust into the house looking for the criminal. He's not there. So the people that were supposed to live in my house are out there in their pajamas. And my kids are all little. They're watching through the window. Like at one point, my son was watching through the mail slot. The guy goes, cut. We got a kid watching through the mail slot. So he was trying to get into the movie. What happened was, so I asked him, I said, on a break, I said, let me ask you a question here. I said, I'm so grateful. I said that you gave me $50. I said, I'm going to use it. I'm going to, you know, look for something. And I said, or I may just put it up like a pizza store and just put it up on my bulletin board. Just say, I got $50 from SWAT too. I said, but the thing was, I said, they got me is that you guys have been prepping this house for like a month for this scene. I said, what if I said no? He says, oh, then we just go up in price. I said, so let me just get this straight. So I took the first offer. I said, oh, yeah, totally. He said, you were so easy. I said, so like, what do you usually do? Oh, he says, oh, he wasn't even like, this was no big deal. He goes, we'll pay $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 just to put. I said, hold on. I said, so you're telling me I signed the check so fast that's why you're inviting me out here and celebrating my name, because is that all the other people that you're asking, can we put your house in there and can we just come outside there? You're paying everybody else $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, and I just get $50? He says, totally. You signed the contract. Here's your $50 check. And I thought to myself, hold on one second. Here is this moment that I could have had so much more, but I was so quick to sign the check because my house is in a movie, a bad movie. And I'm thinking to myself, that's crazy, but all I thought about was this, is that we live in a time that I really believe that God has amazing things for you, that I don't want you to sign the check for something that's not God's plan for your life so fast. I want you not to just go, oh, this is what I gotta do, gotta go over here, gotta do this. I want you to be what God wants you to be. I don't want Tony playing the piano if he's supposed to be up front. And I don't want Pastor Patrick over here and speaking to you guys when he's like 90 years old, when he's supposed to be doing the counseling ministry. I'm like, don't you kids should listen to the Beatles. I don't want that. If he's supposed to be upstairs, him and Rosa doing counseling, then we want him up there. What we don't want is people just going, I don't want Tony going, well, I'm just supposed to be the piano player at times. Going, no. And don't sign the check so fast when God has an amazing future for you. Because we know what God has saved us from, but I want to make sure tonight we know what God has saved us for. And it's in this generation that you have so much working against you. The latest statistic simply says this, that when kids are asked what they want to be, when you deal with destiny, when you're dealing with future, when you're dealing with the four part of the first sentence that we gave here tonight, when kids were asked, What is it that you want for your life and for your future? The two top answers, 80% said, I want to be rich, and 17%, I want to be famous. And nobody knew what for. They just wanted money or to be known, and that's all they wanted to do. And I want tonight to shape this for you and give you something that we would call destiny, because it's you that literally can change this planet. You ready for this? Do you know that right now that half of the planet is 25 and under? 3 billion, there's 3 billion people in the world that are 25 and under. You make up the largest population of the world, 25 and under, on the planet. And as your generation that now are called millennials or Generation Y, or another name that they're calling you now is screenagers, because everything you do is on a screen today. And so, I mean, you watch it. I watch my own. I have 3 children. Three of my kids are in the youth group. And in a couple years, I'll have 4 kids in the youth group. And so they know with me because of this screenager connotation that's over you. They never tell me, hey, I got the high score in Minecraft. They never tell me that, because I always tell them. I said, you know what high score means? And they'll tell me every time. They go, yes, high score means unemployed, because no one's going to hire you because you got the high score, or because you did so good on Grand Theft Auto. Nobody really cares. And so there will be no job for you. So just listen for a second. And how do we get you to discover what you were made for? How do we bring you to that point? How do we take you as college students? How do we take you as high school students? And how do we begin to make sure you don't sign the check too quickly and just go, I'm supposed to do this. My dad did this. My brother did this. I'm supposed to do this. And I don't want you to sign the check until we begin to realize what God has made you for. And I'm going to take a character of the Bible and give you 3 chapters of his life, because I don't think there's anybody else that I found in the Bible that goes from teenager to destiny that we really have all the movements of his life than really David. David in the Bible starts as a teenager and he gets right to his destiny, which is going to be king of the most powerful country in the world. With God's help, he not only becomes king, he becomes a politician. He becomes a world leader. He becomes, oh my goodness, talk about a musician. David begins to come to a point in his life where he is not only writing music, but if you think about it, I mean, I look at how amazing these musicians are. And if you sell 1 million pieces of music, you have gone platinum if you sell 1 million. What if you sold 1 billion pieces of music? That's what David has sold. His Psalms just this year will become off the charts, because there is between right now on the planet, we produce 60 to 80 million Bibles that are going out every single year. 60 to 80 million Bibles just constantly going out. And you think about, this is what David has done, wrote music. He's an army general. He's a politician. He has been an armor bearer. He's done all these incredible things, and we can watch his journey. And so what destiny means is what you were made for. That's all destiny is. What God created you to do. It's like what Mark Twain said. He said, the 2 most important days of your life is the day you were born and the day you realize what you were born to do. And so tonight, I want to help you on the second part. I don't want your goal to be, I just want to be famous. I just want to be rich. I want your goal to be, I want to be what God has made me for. I want to do it. I don't want to sign a $50 check when God has so much more for me. When God wants to do all these incredible things. And I want you to see tonight, and this is what I want you to write down, because I want you to follow 3 movements that got David to the place he's supposed to be. That I think David's destiny, get this down, had 3 characters to it, 3 people that intersected with his life that I want to give to you tonight, and then kind of give you a statement with each of these. So let me tell you the 3 characters, and then let me give you a little statement, and then I need you to keep some space between them. Because the 3 characters that got him to where he was supposed to be, that I think every one of you, including me, Tony talked about it tonight. Pastor Patrick can tell you about it. I can tell you about it. These 3 people have to be part of your life. I want to do something with you tonight. Let me just do this with you. Because there are people on certain streets. I see it when I was driving in the cab here coming from the airport. And some people think that they can tell you their future or your future if they just look at your hand and try to read your hand. And then they can try to tell your future. In a sense, I bet I can do it for you tonight. This is what I want you to do. Take your hand and hold it out right now. I'm going to tell you what your future is. Ready for this? You're going like, hold on. Tony's going like, this is the worst time. First time he's going to do fortune tell. Let me just tell you. Here it is. Hold that hand out. I'm not interested in your palm. I'm interested in those five fingers. Here's what I want you to think in your mind. Don't say them out loud. Here's what I want you to think in your mind. Who are the five closest people in your life right now? Your five most important friends. Just think right now. That's so-and-so. It's Pookie, Vivo, Shay Shay. And all of a sudden, okay, just think right now. Who are the five most important? Okay, look at me for a second. This is one of my best friends. He's a chaplain for the Oakland A's, says this. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Let me say that again. Show me those five friends. Let me ask you questions about those five people you just named. I'll tell you what your future is going to be. Because if those five names are not on the same path with what you're going to be, your future is not going to end up with and you're going to usually end up with a $50 future. How many of you are going, I'm not signing that check tonight? Anybody with me? Going, I'm not. Okay, so let me help you. Because some of you may have to get rid of one of those fingers tonight. So one of those may have to, you know, and when you think about it, you're like, Shay Shay's got to go. And you may look at this and just think to yourself, because here's what it, the five people that you are most in contact with will determine really your future. So let me give you three that I know that are part of David's life. Because these three, I think, are going to have to be part of your life. So let me give you the three names, and let me give you a statement. So get ready to write these names down. First one is Samuel. Second one is Goliath. And these aren't friends, but these are movements in David's life. Samuel, Goliath, and Saul. Write those three names down. Samuel, Goliath, and Saul. These are going to be the three movements of David's life. These are going to be the three narratives that is going to show you how to get to what you were created for. And so I want to walk you through it and do whatever I can. I'm hoping I'm going to finish tonight. And if I don't, you have to come on the retreat. So here we go. This is what we'll do. So write this down. Number one, I'm going to give you the 3 points, and then we're going to do it. Everybody with me? Samuel, Goliath, Saul. Okay. Number one, you need a Samuel to listen to. Write that down. You need a Samuel to listen to. You need a Goliath to conquer. And you need a Saul to forgive. Okay, let me give it to you again. You need a Samuel to listen to. You need a Goliath to conquer. And you need a Saul to forgive. These are three huge movements. Let me give you one more time. There'll be a test at the very end. So listen. You need a Samuel to listen to, a Goliath to conquer, and a Saul to forgive. You're going to need your Samuel, Goliath, and your Saul. So number one, let's start with the friend. And here's what you're going to do. It's very simple. With 1 Samuel 16, 17, and 18, we'll go accordingly to each chapter. So when we deal with the Samuel, 1 Samuel 16. When we deal with Goliath, 1 Samuel 17. And when we deal with Saul, 1 Samuel 18. So just keep that in mind. 16, 17, 18, we'll go with 1, 2, and 3. Does that make sense? All right, let's do this. Number one, you need a Samuel to listen to. Samuel is the priest that found David when he was simply being a shepherd in 1 Samuel chapter 16 and identified David when his own father forgot about him. He was the one that when everybody else, when Samuel came, when God said to Samuel, you need to find the next king. Samuel shows up at the house of Jesse. I think the next king is here. And Jesse, the father of David, brings out all of the brothers, but doesn't bring out David. Think about that. Your dad doesn't even bring you out because he doesn't even think you're king material. Your dad doesn't even bring you out. So when you talk to me going like, man, my family was messed up. So was David's. I'm dysfunctional. Hey, we're all dysfunctional. We all have dysfunctional stories. Every one of us has a bad story to tell. How many would say yes? We all have one, okay? So listen, so it's not a matter of my dad wasn't there. David's dad didn't even put him out in front, left him out there. In fact, Samuel had to go, is there any other kids? Because I don't feel like from the Lord that any of these are supposed to be. He goes, oh yeah, we got Davey who's watching sheep out there. So he goes, bring him. And God goes, that's the one that I want you to get. Think about this. So Samuel is the one. Samuel is, get this, is the godly voice in his life. And Samuel, here's the part I want you to get. Samuel sees future on David before anybody else does. And you have to have somebody in your life that can see future over you better than you even see your own future. Because what we're faced with with this generation, with so many people, and it really goes through any generation, is that the number one, really, or the number one groups of people that we spend most of our times with, 80% of our time is spent with our own peers, and we don't even deal, and usually the other 20% are teachers or professors, and we're never with a Samuel, a mentor, somebody who sees future over us more than we can see. Because we want to find somebody that will become part of our life, that we're, every time you come here, you're getting closer to a Samuel. When you get a chance to be with Pastor Patrick and Rosa, that's like a Samuel. That's like a voice that says, I see future over you. Think about what Tony said tonight. He goes, that was the most influential people in my life. They're the ones that formed me and trained. You know what happened with Tony? He got close to somebody who saw future over him. He got close to somebody. And that's what happened to me when David Wilkerson asked me to go to Detroit with his son and go help him start a church. I'm thinking, I'm not called to do that. My dad was a New York City policeman. All of his brothers, all my Italian family were New York City firemen, New York City policemen. And I was just going to go to Baylor. I was going to do my undergrad work. I was going to go to the FBI Academy like my dad did and probably just end up doing what my father did and all of his brothers and all my uncles did. But it's amazing what happens when you get a voice in your life, like a Samuel, that can see more than you can see, that can begin to speak to things in your life that you wouldn't even have identified yourself. And that's why this is so key. Make a Samuel a non-negotiable part of your life, because a Samuel can become a game changer for you. A Samuel's voice. Well, how do I get that, Pastor? As soon as you saw leaders come on the stage, you need to start figuring out which one you're going to talk to and say, I'm taking them out for coffee because that's the voice. Like, I want to ask you a question. If you've got a big decision ahead of you, who do you talk to? Who do you process with? Because if you don't have anybody, watch this now, because if all you do is process this way and you don't know how to process up, you're going to be in a very dangerous position for your life. Okay, let me explain to you this way. Next to Jesus, the wisest man that ever lived on this planet, what was his name? Solomon. Okay, think about this. If you're the smartest man on the planet, smartest man, why would he write, ready for this? Why would he write these simple things? There is, you ready for this? He says, there is victory or... It says it three times in the book of Proverbs. He says there is victory, or there is good. There is victory in the counsel of many, which means that if I can talk with the right people, I can get good counsel. You would feel like if you are the smartest man on the planet, you should say, "I got this." That should be your verse. Not like I need people in my life. The verse should be, I got this, I'm smart. And if the smartest man on the planet, which none of us, including me, come close to, says I need people in my life to make decisions, who are we not to have people in our life? Who are we not to, we just go, I'm just gonna do what I wanna do. Bad choice. But people who don't have a Samuel usually end up making some really horrific mistakes. Who is it that you can point to that says, they helped me, they helped me, they got me to where I'm supposed to be? Because you could sit here today and just go, my family's messed up. But that's why God put you in spiritual family. Because even if your family's messed up, God can give you the right people to work this out. Let me explain it to you this way. I may reference it twice, but let me reference it once. I love reading biographies because I like reading the process on how people figure it out. I want to see what people were part of their lives. So I'll read biographies of anybody because I want to see what their process is. And it's so important to me. So I'm not a leadership book guy. Some people read leadership books and they're just going like, here are the five things you need to do. And they all start with P. So I'm not like that. So let me just say this to you. I want to know, hey, tell me about the bumps and bruises. Tell me about all the pain that you went through to get to the right decision. So I'm reading now about what is considered the greatest coach in college basketball history. His name was John Wooden from UCLA. Won 12 national championships. I mean, there's nobody, not Coach K, nobody comes close to him. 12 national championships in 14 years. Think how crazy that is. How many like college basketball? You know what's crazy? Is that he didn't win any national championships for the first 18 years. Can you imagine that? How many know he would have been fired real quick? But here's what's crazy, is that because we are so impatient in our culture, can you imagine if they didn't wait for John Wooden to mature and all of a sudden they kicked him out because he didn't win anything in the first 5 years? I mean, can you imagine? And then all of a sudden you go down, your school and your teams go down in college basketball history, that you won 12 national championships in 14 years. That's amazing. No one has ever even come close to that. And he quit after he won his 12th national championship. He had a rule, which I thought is just brilliant. And here was John Wooden's rule. You see this nowhere in any sport. Football season, not one of these guys will do this. Nobody does this. Watch it. Because they'll point to every other person. The rule was this. If you came down and you were part of those national championship teams, and if you scored every point you scored, you ready for this? You could not run down the court until you pointed to the guy who passed you the ball. You were acknowledging, I wouldn't have done this if it wasn't for you. Everybody else, listen, when the Giants or the Jets, or they sack somebody and boom, they knock them down. Are they pointing to their whole defensive line going, hey, you made this happen. God bless you. You made this happen. I really love you. Love you, bro. Nobody is doing that. Everyone's, they're like the man, and you go, I want to go like, bro, how do you think you got through? How do you think you made it? Tony told us how he made it, because what Tony did was he went, boom. Tony was going like, I'm not taking the ball until I point and say, the only reason why I'm standing here is boom. And I could tell you, if you have nobody to point to, you're in a very difficult position. You got to say, I got to get someone to point to, and start looking around going like, I'm pointing at you. You're stuck with me. Now don't point to me because I'm flying out of here tomorrow. So everyone's going like, mm-mm, you. I'm going, uh-uh. Get him. He's part of the counseling ministry. And this is so huge that I want you guys to understand. Every one of us, including me, not only needs a Samuel that sees future over me, I still have Samuels in my life. And I won't make a decision. I didn't make a decision to come to New York. I didn't make a decision to go to Detroit until I went to the Samuels. And when I got there, and if any one of them said, no, you shouldn't go, I wouldn't have gone. But anytime I'm in a place in ministry, I can point to 3 and 4 men and say, those voices changed my life. Those voices I trust. And this is so important, that when David's life, there has to be somebody that sees further than you see. And that's why I want to tell you, you can call him a mentor. You can call him a coach, because we're in that season now. Everybody's got a coach. Thanks for coaching me. Somebody texted me that the other day. I was walking them through something. Go, thanks for coaching me. I said, I'm not a coach. And so now that's kind of the new term. I don't care what you call it. You've got to get a Samuel, a godly voice in your life. Does that make sense? Okay, number two, write this down. 1 Samuel 17, number two says, you need a Goliath to conquer. You need something bigger than you that you've got to begin to move forward in, that without God, with a challenge that needs God to help you do it. Goliath means, this is a 9-foot giant. You know the story. 9-foot giant. David's walks on the scene and all he's got is a slingshot, 5 stones. And all of a sudden, everybody's going like, he's toast. There is no way. Because the rule was, whoever's champion beat the other one, everybody had to serve that country. And I could just see everybody going like, yep, we're going to be Philistines. And here's David just going like, oh, I got a rock. And all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, there's no way. The odds are totally against us. The challenge is too crazy. And this is what we need. This is what you need. This is what I needed. I mean, that's why when David Wilkerson goes, I want you to go to Detroit. Okay, just listen for a second. He sends me to Detroit. Talk about a Goliath. I'm 19 years old. Okay, here's the part I want you to get. I grew up in the church. In fact, I was born not too far from here, almost in the choir loft during the Christmas concert. It was at a church that's not there anymore, across from Madison Square Garden, called Glad Tidings Tabernacle. And my mom was pregnant with me and said that the choir director said, I need you to sing soprano. She goes, well, I'm due. The baby could come. He says, you got to sing. So my mom sang on December 18th, and 4 days later on December 22nd, write that down because you need to send me something. And so you have December 22nd, and then I was born. So I was born in the church, born there. I grew up in youth groups, in children's church. I recited things on the stage. I played a trumpet at Easter. I was in church plays. I went to kids camp, youth camp. I went to retreats like all you guys had. I got filled with the Holy Spirit on a Sunday night, baptized in the church. I did everything in the church. So at 19 years old, when I was going to Detroit, you have to understand something. I committed my life to God at a young age. Committed everything. And now I'm asked, I made a decision with God that I would not date anybody until I was ready to put a ring on their finger. People thought I was out of my mind. And I felt like God was wanting to help me in purity and all through my teen years. And so when I got married at 33 years old, I was a virgin at 33 years old. You know what the joy was to watch my wife come down the aisle and not have violated her before she comes down the aisle? You know what the joy of that was? To wait for 33, okay, think about this. I'm white, I'm 33, I'm a virgin, okay? You ready for this? And then David Wilkerson sends me to the most segregated city in America to work in a prostitution hotel to buy a triple X movie theater. I'm going like, you're out of your mind. I said, I'm a virgin. I'm white. The community is 99% black. Look at me. Like, I am a white guy. I mean, this, you shouldn't send me. My life, I mean, I've never done anything. I've never been drunk. I've never done drugs in my life. I think I smoked a cigarette one time because it was on the ground and I picked it up and lit it and felt good. But I don't even know. I'm not the guy that you want to call to go to Detroit. Send Patrick, but don't send me. He's the one you should send. I mean, think about this. I'm just the guy. And God goes, that's your Goliath. Because if you don't have me, this thing's going to go awfully bad. Because I'm sitting there thinking, I'm supposed to start a church here. And I don't even know what to do. I'm so out of my element. But what I'm learning more and more about this whole Goliath issue is that God will give us these challenges. Get this down. The measure of a life is not its duration, but its donation. Life is not measured by how long you live. Life is measured by how much you give. Not duration, but donation is what Corrie Ten Boom said. And that's so important for us to understand. What's tough for this generation is because we try as parents, and I've got to watch this with my kids, we try to stop the Goliath so you don't have to face what we faced. Because we live in this culture that sometimes that this generation, it just gets, you celebrate everything. There's no struggle. Like my girls were switching rooms a couple weeks ago, and I walked into my 8-year-old's room. She showed me 3 boxes of trophies. I said, how do you have 3 boxes of trophies and you're 8? I said, at 18, I didn't have that many trophies. Well, she goes, I got like 12th place in this thing, and I got like 18th place here. They're like, there was like an 18th place ribbon. Like it was like, you know, turquoise. And I was just going like, so if you get a turquoise ribbon, it's not good. And so she goes like, and I got this trophy for participation. I go, does anybody give a trophy for winning anymore? You just have to show up. You go, hey, they're here. Here's a trophy. And everybody wants something. There's no winners and losers. Everybody's a participant. That's why I have seen more kid movies. Oh, my goodness. I haven't seen a human in a movie for so long. But my favorite line in a kid's movie, one of my favorite other than Despicable Me, which is by far the greatest of all the kid movies. There's no doubt. We all know that to be true. But the greatest line in the kid movies is from The Incredibles, which is a close second to the greatest kid movie, is when they're arguing over, Mr. Incredible is arguing with his wife that she wants him to show up at Dash's graduation. Let me just read it to you. He says, she goes, you got to show up at the graduation. And he goes, I can't believe you don't want to go to your own son's graduation. He goes, it's not a graduation. He's moving from the fourth to the fifth grade. She goes, it's a ceremony. He goes, this is psychotic. We are finding new ways to celebrate mediocrity. And so that's all that is. Everybody graduates. What are you graduating? I'm going from fourth to fifth. Graduating. When are you graduating? I go order a caramel macchiato. And you're going like, what? How do you get a trophy for ordering? I bought something today. I was buying coffee in a deli. And they wanted me to tip. I was going, you just went like this. How do you get a tip? You just, I can do that. How do you get this? Like, you did that. How do you get... And so everybody wants to be rewarded and nobody wants to be challenged today. This is crazy. And you're dealing with a generation that doesn't know how to struggle because parents and leaders try to take the struggle from you. We need a struggle to be what we're called to be. You have to have that. You have to struggle through because it builds character in us. Even if it's struggling to communicate. I talked with Pastor Patrick tonight. I said, hey, I know what you're going to announce tonight. I said, are you doing okay? He says, I'm nervous every time I come out to speak. And I'm with him. I'm scared every time. Every time. And the reason why people go, like, you speak so fast, because I'm trying to get it over with. God, how much more time? Because I really hate this. And so I'm sitting there, because what we do is we take out the struggle to press through to make this thing happen. You're part of a generation that doesn't even know how to have conversations because all your conversations, the only way you communicate is with your thumbs. That's how you communicate. I had to take my own kids and had to challenge them and go, okay, we're going to adults' home and here's what you're going to do. Each of you have to ask two questions to these people. I don't want you sitting going, how you doing? All right, fine. I said, I need you to ask questions because who knows, a Samuel may come out of that conversation. Somebody may like you and you may have a Samuel in your life. But I don't want you, you're never on your phones. When we're sitting down, we're in the car, we have to put all phones away because I want you to learn how to communicate. I don't want you doing this. And then some of you have gone to the next level. This is the generation that doesn't even communicate. They just send emojis. You can't even say good. Hey, we're going to the gate tonight. Pound. You don't even say the words anymore. They go like, why do you even say words? That's how you get a job, J-O-B. Okay, so listen, because you can't just like do an interview going. Hired, yes. We're going to give you 6 digits because you know how to emoji talk. What's scary is that we're living in a generation that is more, get this now, that is more consumers driven than we're more consumers than we are contributors. And the way you become a contributor is to have a Goliath, a challenge in front of you. A challenge that you need God to help you, for God to show up. Because we're faced with all of these things that are in front of us that we need for you to say, God, I want that Goliath. I want to do this, God, but you're going to help me. I'm going to need a Samuel to walk me through it. Golly, Randall was wrote a $50, signed the $50 check in Nashville, and all he was doing was doing petting farms and traveling, going like to little kids' parties. Pet the pony, pet the pony, pet the pony. Ooh, look at the ducks. That's all Randall was doing. Because he signed the $50 check. But he knew he had much more inside of him. He knew God created him for something else. Not just what God saved him from. And he knew that God put something inside of him. And a Samuel came to Randall's life and said, you need to go and be what God wants. I'm so afraid. I don't know if I could do it. It's too big of a challenge. And sent Randall to Hollywood. And said, you need to show them the script you wrote. And Randall comes to Hollywood and shows them his scary, this Christian man who felt like God's called him to write good movies and movies that have a message and a theme. And so Randall finally submits his movie called Braveheart and says, I hope this works. I think it did. And then after that, began to write other things with a message. Everything from Pearl Harbor to Secretariat to heaven can the heaven one with the kid. Heaven is for real. And all these movies. And he felt like I'm supposed to write movies because God made me to just kind of see stories and to write it out. And he could have just signed the check. I'm just doing petting farms in Nashville. Listen, if you're supposed to work at CVS, if you're supposed to work at Duane Reade, I want you to be the best cashier that you can be. I want you to sit there, doing this. Oh, look at that. God bless you today. This is a great, I don't want you to go, welcome. It's like, can I have a tip? Okay, then listen, I want you to realize, if you're called to work at Duane Reade, be the best you can there. But if you're not supposed to be there, then do what God's called you to do. I don't want you to sign a $50 check if he's going, oh, but it's too hard. Welcome to life. It is hard, but that's how you find your destiny. Okay, Pastor Tim. Okay, what time is it? Okay, we got to get ready to close. Point three tomorrow. Is it Tony playing? Tony, the new youth guy. Play point two music. Here we go. And we're done. Listen. Okay, how do I find my destiny? Okay, watch this now. You need a Samuel. You need a godly voice. Not if all of those people on your hand are peers and there's nobody older, then you have no one to process up with. You process this way. And they don't know where they're going. They're as dumb as all of us. He's sitting there going like, what should I do? I don't know. Do what you feel like. Or then you get some Einstein who goes, I'm with you, bro. I'm going, I don't need. Yeah, like you've been there. You've messed up your life, so we're going to mess it up together. I need someone who's ahead of me. That's the same. So then you have Goliath. Tony, good to see you. So now, not only a Samuel to listen to, but a Goliath to conquer. How does David, and this is what I want to close with, how does David not sign the $50 check and just go, I'm just supposed to watch sheep. I'm just a shepherd. I'm really good with a slingshot because there was a bear that was going to come kill the sheep. And I just... And then the guy who wrote Tipping Point wrote a story about me. And then I killed a bear and I killed a lion. And then all of a sudden, you ready for this? This is what's crazy. 1 Samuel 16, that's the story of Samuel being the voice. 1 Samuel 17 is how David gets to meet Goliath. This is crazy. Let me just give you the verses, because how does David find his destiny? It's 1 Samuel 17:17, and here's how it goes. David's dad goes, hey, your brothers are in the army, and I need somebody to deliver cheese. David goes, I'll deliver cheese. That's how he got there. He got there. Think how insane this is. They didn't go like, we need somebody who's like, just like incredible with the slingshot. That's the only way. And David wasn't going like, I'm your man. Okay, it wasn't even like that. It was like, who wants to deliver cheese? I'll be the cheese guy. And who would have thought that by delivering cheese, he faces Goliath? Well, what does that mean, Pastor Tim? Listen to me, students. Listen. Do you know how one of the best ways you can find your Goliath and your destiny? You ready for this? Volunteer for everything. Because as you serve, you will run into what you're supposed to do. So when Pastor Patrick is being asked by Pastor Carter, going, I think I need you to pray about the counseling ministry. But you know what, Pastor Patrick? I'll do it. And if there's any cheese with it, I'll deliver it. And I believe they're going to find their next Goliath and the next challenge to be what they're supposed to be. My goodness, I'm thinking of Tony. I'm watching Tony up here as they're praying for you. You look white as a ghost. I mean, he's like, what did I say yesterday? That's perfect.
Because nobody in the Bible, isn't this interesting? Nobody in the Bible, when God goes, you're Moses, you're supposed to go, Jeremiah, nobody went, finally, I've been waiting for this moment because I've been so ready and I'm so anointed to do this. So finally, someone recognizes the touch of God and I have a bottle of oil and a suit and I'm ready to go. And so, and I have business card. Nobody did that. Everybody went like this. What? Are you crazy? Moses goes, I can't even talk. I stutters. Think about this. Nobody said yes. Everybody was going like, you're out of your mind. You're crazy. Because they knew how big the challenge was. So when you hear up here, say April stands up here and just goes, we need people to volunteer to come out on a Saturday and do the outreach. You just need to go, there. That's a cheese story. We need people to do, what is it? My city belongs to God. You just go, what is it? Yeah, whatever. And so you got God's in the city. So you have this thing, and everybody just goes. And some of you didn't even register. They're going like, we need you to show up. I'm anointed to sing. Well, sing as you march. Water you turned into wine. I mean, then do that. You don't need a microphone to use your gift. Just say yes to as much as you can. We're going on a missions trip. Yes, where are we going? It's dangerous. Yes. Where is it going to be at? Baghdad. Yes. Who knows? Who knows what you may find out? Who knows what can happen? My friend, I can't even tell you where, and I can't even tell you for who, but just like one of those Baghdad crazy things, you have Muslims all over the world finding Jesus. And the number one way they're finding Jesus is showing up, visiting them. It's insane. I've talked with some of them. There's going, it's like, I had a lady come to our church, just goes, I'm here, I'm from Iraq. Jesus appeared to me and told me to come here, and I didn't want to mess this up. I'm going, Jesus, you've been witnessing to her. I don't want to mess this up. So I just, she goes, what do I do? I said, well, just do what Jesus wants, because I don't even know what to say. If Jesus talked to you, then you don't need me talking to you. And so how do you disciple in countries that may kill you? So my friend, who has got this amazing gift in technology. So you know what he came up with? I'm just gonna tell you this. This is awesome. So in order to minister to all of these Muslims, how do you go in there and disciple them? He came up with a whole new concept, and now we're watching Muslims come to Jesus and now taking the step towards discipleship, being baptized, and lives are being changed simply because they wouldn't sign the check. They wouldn't sign the $50 check. I don't want you to sign a check. I don't want you doing what you're not supposed to be doing. You know what's so crazy? I just left Atlanta. In order for me to come to New York, last thing I'll share, because I gotta be done, because it's almost 9. It is 9 o'clock. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be angry. Point three tomorrow at the retreat. So here's the deal. So I'm flying through Atlanta, and because there's no direct flight for me to get here from Louisiana, so I'm in Atlanta. And whenever I was there recently, because one of the guys I'm discipling, that we're Cindy and I are working with their marriage, plays for a National League team, and so the road trip brought him to Atlanta, and so we met him up there, met with them, doing some stuff. And whenever I go and do stuff like that, I don't ever want to eat in like a chain restaurant. I want to eat like in places that are like really part of that culture, that DNA of that city. Just like when I come to New York, I don't want to go like, I have people going like, oh, where do you want to eat tonight? You want to go to Olive Garden? I said, well, you're in New York City. Olive Garden? Here's what's crazy. So I found the craziest name of a restaurant that I've ever seen in my life. You ready for this? This is what it's called. Here's what it's called. The name of the restaurant was called Church of God Grill. Church of God Grill makes the best chicken in town. I'm thinking like, I'm in. So I was reading an article about it, and let me read to you the story about the man who called up the church, called up the grill to see where it was at. The guy goes, hello, Church of God Grill.
And so he asked him, he says, where did you get your name from? This is what he said. We used to have a little church down here in Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, and we started selling chicken dinners after church because our Sunday offerings were so bad. He said, our music was terrible. I didn't preach very well. And so in order for us to keep the lights on, we were making chicken to sell after the services. And that's how we were keeping the doors open and paying the bills. We still had bad music and bad preaching, but our chicken was good. He says, well, people liked the chicken more than the church services, and we did such a good business that eventually we cut back on the church services and we sold more chicken. So eventually we closed down the church altogether, and now we just serve chicken dinners, but we never stopped using the name. We're just called Church of God Grill. Some people are so upset with that, going like, what's happening to the church? I'm happy. You know why? I don't want people preaching that are supposed to be selling chicken. And I don't want chicken people preaching when they should be selling chicken. I want people to do exactly what they're supposed to do. So you know what the best thing was? Shut down the church and give me two legs and a thigh in Jesus' name. If you're not supposed to be on the piano, but you're supposed to be up here, then don't sign that check. Sign this check, Tony. And if you're supposed to be up there putting people's lives back together, both of you, then you better be up there. I don't want to see you over here going, oh, good to see you. I don't want you even there. I want you to be exactly what you're supposed to be. And you know what? I want you to be exactly what you're supposed to be. Just keep saying yes. Stand with me. I'm tired. I'm going to teach you a prayer that someone taught me many years ago. In fact, it was a youth pastor from Alabama. Write this down because this is a cool prayer. One line, one sentence. Here's how the prayer goes. Just a few words. Lord, comma, the answer is yes, even before you ask. I love that. Let me give it to you again. Lord, comma, the answer is yes, even before you ask. I don't even have to think about it. Lord, the answer is yes, even before you ask. And some of you just need to rip up that check that you endorsed and just go, God made me for bigger things. I'm going to get a Samuel I can listen to. The next challenge I get, a Goliath, I'm not going to go, this is too hard. I'm not going to get my participation trophy. I'm going to get first place trophy on this. I need a Samuel to listen to. I need a Goliath to conquer. And tomorrow morning, I need a Saul to forgive. God has so much for you. Bow your head with me, please. I have gone way too long and I'm so sorry, but I want you to be what God's called you to be. I want Tony to be. I want Pastor Patrick and Rosa to be. And I want you at the gate to be what you're called to be. I want all of you. I want Luzvet to be what she's supposed to be. I want April to be what she's supposed to be. I may not know your name, everybody's name that's sitting out here tonight, but here's what I just want us to do tonight before we close. The greatest yes you can ever give is a yes to follow Jesus. That's your greatest yes. That's the greatest yes you can do, just to go, yes, I'll follow you. You are real. You do have a plan for my life. And if, let me just say this. Let me just stay for a moment. If you're here tonight and you've never said yes to God for the relationship, let me tell you what religion wants. Religion wants a day of the week from you. Religion wants a day of the week. Jesus wants every day. It's called a relationship. Religion wants you on Sunday, and said, and that never works. Religion never can fix anything. Jesus wants a relationship. He wants a friendship. That's what he wants. And some of you have never said yes to that relationship before. You've said yes to church. You've said yes to the gate. You've said yes to coming to a retreat, but you've never said yes to a relationship with God himself, the creator of the universe.
The God who sent his own son to die for you. So you can not only be saved from something, but saved for something. And that's where the journey starts. And if you're here tonight and say, Pastor Tim, I've never said yes to that relationship. It's called being born again. You're born once and you're born again once. And maybe you've never made that decision before. I want to invite you that tonight can be the best yes you can ever give. If you're here tonight, say, Pastor Tim, I want that relationship you're talking about with God tonight. I've never said yes to him before. I've said yes to everything else, even religious things, but never yes to Jesus. But tonight I say yes because he loves me, he died for me, and created me on purpose and for a purpose. And tonight I say yes to him. If you're here tonight and say, Pastor Tim, when you close in prayer, and we're all gonna pray together, but if you're here tonight and say, I'm not gonna embarrass you, but if you're here tonight and say, I want to say yes to following Jesus. I want to be a follower. I want to go with him. I want relationship, not religion. I want relationship that you're talking about. And I've never said yes, but tonight I'm saying yes. If that's you, would you raise your hand and say, pray for me. Hold it up high. Anybody in this place? I want to make sure. I want you to got you over there. Anybody else? Hold it up high because I want to see it. Thank you. Anybody else? Because I want to make sure. See you over there, there, there. Who else? Got you over there in the corner. That's fantastic. Over there, got you. Thank you so much. Yes, there, those two over there. Anybody else? I want to make sure I didn't miss anybody. I'm holding your hand up so I can make sure I see it. Thank you. Got you over there, young man. Anybody else? Got you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Got you. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you so much. This is the beginning. This is the best yes you can give. Can we do this with these that are here just for a moment? I know we do a lot of altar calls here. I know that. But just for a moment tonight, let's join together with them, all of us. Come on. Let's say this together. Say, Jesus, thank you that you want a relationship with me. Today, Lord God, I trust my life to you. I say yes to you. I say yes to forgiveness. Yes to you being in charge. Yes to you owning me. Yes to you getting every day. Yes to lordship. Yes to what I'm created for. I thank you, God, that this is the best yes that I can give. And I thank you that you said yes and sent your son to die for me and rise from the dead. And I thank you in Jesus' name. And everybody said amen. That's awesome. Can we put our hands together for just a second? And can we just do this? Listen, every person, lift your hand to the Lord right now because we're so over time. Hold your hand up. I want you to say this with me. Say, Lord, the answer is yes, even before you ask. Come on, say it one more time. Lord, the answer is yes, even before you ask. Let me find a Samuel that would speak into my life. Give me a Goliath to conquer, and give me a forgiving spirit in Jesus' name. And everybody said amen. Don't sign the $50 check. You're worth way more. God bless you.